All right. Welcome back. I hope you're taking advantage of, and I know it's a little bit repetitious, but this is a big war in Ukraine being fought actually with a template that is not at all unlike much of World War I. Now, to make this clear, since the great Ukrainian counteroffensive, which has been led every step of the way by active American military, active NATO military, U.S. generals retired and so forth are strategizing all this, hundreds and hundreds of tanks, maybe a couple, I don't know how many, APCs, Bradleys for the most part, artillery systems from France and elsewhere, the Italy, that the Ukrainians say don't work well, the U.S. 777 artillery system works apparently very well. But the Ukrainians have had their asses handed to them on a platter. They're dead. Over 20,000 dead since this counteroffensive began in the first part of June, and they're still at it. They issued, as I think you know, a national call-up, a national conscription of every male in the country from age 65 on down to 16. And they're just throwing these people into the meat grinder with a couple of weeks training, and that's it. They're dead. Dead. Now, if you watch these videos from Military Summary, I think they're superb. This guy has clearly got connections, big time. And he's laying it out with graphics, a lot of video inserts, and he's telling you exactly what's going on. The sum total of land that has changed hands since the start of the Ukrainian counteroffensive, in which 20,000 are dead minimum. We don't know how many Russian soldiers are dead. We don't know how many injuries there are on both sides, but it's a lot. The total sum of land that has changed hands is to the advantage and favor of the Russian military. Russia has captured about 100 square kilometers of territory that was heretofore Ukrainian or in the gray zone. So the Ukrainians have a net loss of territory and a horrific loss of personnel. They're just slaughtering their own army. Mitchell Henderson is back tonight. Mitch has a lot to talk about. Welcome back, Mitch. Have at it.
Good to be here. First, on the first note, let me say last Wednesday, the Russians blew up a hotel in Kramatorsk in the Donetsk province, and it was being used as a headquarters for a brigade fighting there. When they bombed this, they killed a lot of Americans, American soldiers, when they did this, because it's Americans running this war. That's why they can throw so many lives away, is because it's not American lives. What do they care?
Right.
After my last episode, I had some people contact me just to add a little bit more to what was going on in the Wagner mutiny and the future of military operations in Ukraine. So what I'm about to do is I'm going to tell you what was going on in the minds of everybody in Russia. Okay? So...
Right.
Without further ado, okay,
yeah,
so the Wagner mutiny was to be a cover to move troops and reorganize the military command. Let me state the problem. Putin is not a military man. He has a law degree and a PhD in economics. He was a KGB intelligence officer, so he had no military training there. GRU military intelligence officers do have a grasp of organizing for war and the tactics, operational art, and strategy to win wars. A military intelligence officer has to understand how the enemy fights, their strategy, their tactics that they use, and stuff like that. So they would have some knowledge. KGB intelligence officers have no such training or experience. Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu also has no military training and has no experience with tactics, operational art, or strategy. Shoigu was a civil engineer. He worked construction projects for 10 years. Then he spent 20 years as the Minister for Emergency Situations before becoming a Minister of Defense 11 years ago. Prigozhin was critical of this, although Prigozhin has no experience or training in tactics, operational art, or strategy either. So that issue is this. You cannot win any war purely on the defense. On the defense means that your enemy has the initiative and you don't. The defense is a temporary state that buys time for you to go on the offense. The offense is the object of the war, to be on the offensive. The offense is the only way to win war, period, full stop. The offense has the initiative, and the one with the initiative is the one who will win. Yesterday, CIA Director William Burns said that the Russians are not happy with Putin, so they are recruiting disaffected Russians to be human intelligence assets. This is delusional. It is true that Russians are unhappy with the conduct of the war, but they are angry that 90% of the Ukrainian army is on the Donbass front, leaving the rest of Ukraine essentially defenseless. Russia could attack south from Belarus along the Polish border and cut off further supply by land to the Ukrainian army and preempt NATO from flooding troops in to save Ukraine. There is nothing substantial to stop this invasion. Russia could also invade west to Odessa and cut off NATO supplies by sea and from Romania. It would also link Russian Transnistria with Russia. It would keep NATO from having naval bases along the north shore of the Black Sea. Russia could invade Kharkov and protect Russia proper from Ukrainian terrorist attacks on the civilian population there. Finally, Russia could invade south to take Kiev and finish the war. Russians are extremely angry at Putin for not doing this. Putin could not possibly punish Prigozhin because that is what he was complaining about, and the people are sympathetic with his view that the Kremlin and the Ministry of Defense are traitors and cowards for not exploiting the strategic opening. This was a big crisis in Russia. Okay, so the Russian people are apoplectic that Putin has not killed Zelensky, even though Zelensky tried to kill Putin. The Russian people are starting to see Putin as weak and timid, a moral coward. There has been a humongous shift amongst the Russian population in their attitudes towards Americans and Europeans. But plainly, they hate us with a passion. They do not see peace in negotiations. They see NATO as a forever enemy. Most Russians are for breaking all diplomatic relations with the West, not allowing trade, tourism, or finance from the West. What we do not understand about Russians seeing us as Satan, what don't we see about that? To them, we are all sodomite race traitors. Burns, the CIA director, is simply delusional, like every other United States government official without exception. The Russians of the Donbass, New Russia, are tired of war. They feel like they are being sacrificed for nebulous goals. They know that Putin could invade Ukraine and end the war in a month and end their suffering in a month. They are exhausted.
Okay, hold on, Mitch. Hold that thought, please. That's really important. It certainly validates and verifies what I've felt as a military novice, but watching this for as long as I have in many other wars, I don't see why Russia has not done that. I don't get it. Now, there is that story that Putin was contacted, made a deal with the international Zionist power brokers, which include almost all the oligarchs. Of course, they're all Jewish, that he would not kill Zelensky. That was early on. Zelensky is still alive and well. There has been no direct effort to take him out with a hypersonic missile. That's a good question the Russian people have to Vladimir Putin. Why is he still alive? Why are we playing this World War I trench warfare game when we could go in there and take this thing down? What are we doing? And they're right. Now, I would also suggest that Prigozhin may not have a military background, but that doesn't prevent somebody from learning quickly on the job if they're smart and they have a tactical mind, which he may very well have. He also has, as we know, supremely good and gifted commanders that work under the Wagner PMC. He took Bakhmut, Artyomovsk. He took it. And the Russians now are on the verge of losing part of it. Yesterday, it was reported the Ukrainians were actually freely able to enter the western part of the city of Bakhmut. I think they were supposedly driven out, but I don't have confirmation of that. That was reported on Military Summary, that they were able to go right into the western parts of the town. So if that town were to fall to Ukraine after the sacrifice that the Wagner musicians laid out to capture it, that would be a black eye in the history of Russia. So we'll see. Anyhow, go ahead, Mitch, please.
Well, let's put it this way. So he does have excellent field commanders and stuff like that, and those guys do understand the principles of war, the principles of fighting and stuff. Okay, I'm sure they explained everything to Prigozhin. Okay, so even if he didn't independently came up with that, he got his information from a great source.
And he made the right decisions, yeah.
Yeah.
So, he doesn't think Shoigu is able to do. Is Shoigu, I don't know what his military background is, but he is not held in high regard.
He has none. He has no military background.
He's a bureaucrat. Right.
Yeah, he was a civil engineer. He did construction for 10 years, then 20 years. He was the Minister of Emergency Situations. But none of that is military. He's never had any military background.
You understand Prigozhin's frustration then. And
right.
Yeah, this isn't over, all right? Wagner is being regrouped. I would suggest that Prigozhin will be back as the acknowledged leader of the PMC. They've got 25,000. I think they have 75,000 already total under contract to Wagner PMC, and they're recruiting all the time. So this isn't over. And I don't think those men signed that agreement with the MOD.
Well, no, I'll kind of get to that in a little bit, but the people are in the Donbass. They are exhausted with Putin's excuses. You see, leadership is never about making excuses. It is always about accomplishing the goal, getting
good
things
job.
Done.
You got
okay.
It.
Yep. So the Russians in old Russia are also tired of war. They are frustrated at Putin's lack of aggressiveness, and they know Putin could end the war in a month. They are frustrated at Putin's inaction. The best time to go on the offense would be before July 11th, when the NATO meeting will be held in Vilnius. This is a great opportunity that Putin will probably miss. If Russia does not go on the offensive by August 1st, they will have snatched defeat from the jaws of victory. Russia will lose. Russia will fall, and they will lose their nation. They will become a satanic sodomite pedophile tranny nation like us. The Russian people are angry with Putin because they do not want this. Putin will not survive the fall of Russia. Russia will be broken into client states and the woke New World Order. Now, keep in mind, I'm expressing the frustrations of the Russian people. Okay, this is their fears, their frustrations. In a desperate attempt to avoid this, Russia will have no choice but to use nuclear weapons. But after the Karaganov article on lowering the threshold for going nuclear, the Russian people have no faith that Putin will ever use nuclear weapons. They reason if he will not invade Ukraine and end the war and the suffering, he will let Russia and the Russian people be exterminated, and Russia will be settled by Asians, Middle Easterners, Africans, and Latin Americans. Putin is losing his people and must act soon if he wants to stay in power. Russians say that if he misses this opportunity to end the war, that he should be murdered in the streets like Muammar Gaddafi. Hatred for him and the general staff is fundamental now. But if he fails to take action, they will hate him as much as they hate Zelensky. He will be assassinated. These are the sentiments of Russians, okay?
Mm-hmm.
For the past year, the disgusting pedophile Biden has put the world at the risk of nuclear war because of his lack of foresight and vision. Now the Russians see clearly that Putin could end the war in a month and avoid nuclear war and quit putting Russia at risk of failing. At this moment in Russia, the Russian people see Putin as the timid leader that will cause nuclear war out of weakness and lack of vision. His lack of aggressiveness in the prosecution of the war seems both un-Russian and shameful to them. Just as apoplectic as we are about the pedophile Biden's incompetence, the Russian people are beginning to feel the same way about Putin. They are beginning to see Putin as a threat to their lives, their children, their faith, their future, and to the existence of the Russian state and people.
Wow.
If Putin does not go on the offensive, he will be dead or thrown out of office by any means necessary. The Russian people feel like they are doing their part, but that Putin and Shoigu are not doing their part. Resentment is growing fast. Russians are asking why Russia has not just killed Zelensky, and they are beginning to wonder if Putin and Zelensky are working together because Ukraine is wide open for invasion and Putin will not do it. Putin is not taking any strategic advantages. At this point, what keeps Zelensky in power and guarantees the survival of the Ukrainian state is Putin alone. Putin could not really call Prigozhin and the Wagner Group traitors because the Russian population is beginning to see Putin as the traitor to the motherland due to his inaction. Just by killing Zelensky alone, he could give NATO an out from the conflict. So he just refuses to do what needs to be done. There's much talk about Russians, about Putin being a puppet of the disgusting pedophile Biden. They're starting to say he works for Biden. If Putin does not act, he is at risk of being overthrown with popular support. Biden and Blinken will gloat, and the American people will be oppressed worse than the pedophile Marxist regime. History will not be kind to Putin. Putin can win and save his nation if he acts soon. The longer he waits, the more likely those opportunities will slip away from him. Part of the agreement to end the phony mutiny was that Russia would go on the offensive and end the war in Ukraine. Putin is a big fan of Sun Tzu's Art of War, and Sun Tzu wrote, "There has never been a protracted war from which a country has benefited." There is a possibility that if the Russian offensive does not happen before the BRICS meeting in South Africa, that Russia itself will shoot down Putin's plane and blame it on NATO. Russia will then promptly launch a full nuclear attack on NATO, using the murder of Putin as the justification for nuclear war. You see, they know that the West intends to capture or kill Putin. So based on that, it is a credible explanation that NATO did it. This is how tired of Putin's weak and willed response the people are. The U.S. has noticed that Putin is not taking the initiative, and they expect the tide to turn against the Russians and the Zaporizhzhia front, just enough to make the Russians look harried, and now the U.S. and Ukraine fully believe they can set off a nuke in Zaporizhzhia to give NATO an excuse to enter the war. Russia will lose because they are defeated already if they don't go on the offensive. In other words, if they just go on the offensive, these bad things are not likely to happen. Okay.
Now, Mitch, hold that thought. When you say go on the offensive, how big an offensive? Where would the offensive be? How will it be prosecuted?
Okay. Well, the way
take your
that
time.
It is
take
is that
time.
Is that. If they've got the troops of Belarus already, so they need to go. They need to attack south from Belarus along the Polish border and cut off NATO access to Ukraine. That will keep Western troops from coming in. It will also stop supplies, even the more advanced weapons we intend to send them. We're going to send them weapons that they have said that we cannot use, and we're going to send them so they
more
can stop
lines.
That from
more red lines.
Yes, they can stop that. Okay. That's one axis. The other axis is to attack from Kherson over to Odessa and link up with to Transnistria. There's a lot of ammo and stuff there, too, that they could use. That will cut off the coast so that NATO cannot resupply Ukraine from Romania or from the Black Sea. Okay. It'll also keep NATO bases off the northern Black Sea. Okay. So those are the two main ones that they need to do to basically encircle Ukraine. The fight north, going south from Belarus, there's practically nothing to stop them. Nothing to stop them. Okay. The fight from Kherson, they have like three or four brigades, like Mykolaiv, and then a few more brigades over in Odessa. That should not be a problem. They can take that. Okay. Then they need to attack south from Belarus back into Kiev. okay? Kiev, if you remember, let's go back. When Russia had Kiev, when they were talking peace with Zelensky, Russia said, okay, well, we'll pull out of Kiev, and then we can talk. So Zelensky said, okay. But then when they pulled out of Kiev, Zelensky said, okay, well, yeah, no, we're not going to talk. We're not going to have
They had that whole enormous force, miles and miles and miles and miles of troops and heavy armor, artillery, and they could have gone right on in.
It probably wouldn't even take them a month to defeat Ukraine. It would be less than that. If they have no method of resupply, they're sunk fast. They're on life support right now. That's why the Russians are so angry at Putin. Like, the summer is just passing us on by, and you're not going on an offensive.
It is
axiomatic.
All true.
You are going to fight in the Ukraine and Russia, you got to start early, because as soon as the cold comes, it's over. Okay? It makes it much more difficult. So now's the time he's got to do it. He's pussyfooting around. But I think the message has been sent to him. That's what this whole mutiny play was about. It was about sending a message to Putin that, hey, get off your butt and do your job, you know? So,
Shoigu has to go from everything I've read. Gerasimov, they're not going to miss him. Surovikin is probably the one that they should put in charge. He seems to be the no-nonsense guy. Look, this war as it's being fought right now is simply a war of stalemated attrition. That's what it is.
Right.
It's like World War One. It's asinine.
The concept wasn't bad, to get the Ukrainians come in and spend their army in these kill boxes they set up. That's a good idea, okay? But okay, they've kicked their butts. Now it's time. They've got all their forces. Like 90% of their forces are on the Donbass front. The rest of Ukraine is undefended, basically.
Correct.
They could just walk in and walk over it, okay?
And thermobaric bomb every Ukrainian position, on down the line. Or my idea, which I think is still a good one, you give 36 hours, empty Kharkov, empty Odessa, empty Kiev.
Mm-hmm.
In 36 hours, they will be leveled. That's it. We're done. Done. Finished.
Exactly.
But that isn't going to happen. Something's really wrong with the Russian leadership. You are right. You've summed that up really very astutely. And I can only imagine the grumbling in the Russian high command about this. I don't think Gerasimov is, unless he's working on a leash, is the right guy. It's not happening. You know, he can hold off the Uke army. That's fine. They can trade trenches back and forth. That's okay. But as you said, I mean, how many pieces of armor have they destroyed now? They're getting dozens more tanks, by the way, today that came out. F-16s aren't going to change anything. They shot down a Su-24, a Su-25. Anyway, the Russians did. So the Ukrainians have no air superiority at all. Nothing. Nothing.
No. So anyways, nonetheless, if Putin doesn't go on the offensive, he's lost the initiative, he's lost the war. It'll be the first time in modern history that Russia is conquered, and it will be because of Putin's timidity. Okay. So this past weekend, Poland asked to have nuclear weapons on Polish soil. Dmitry Medvedev said that if Poland gets nukes, Russia will launch a nuclear attack. But not to worry. If Russia will not take advantage of a strategic opportunity to win the war, troops with their fingers on the nuclear trigger will not pull it. Okay? Putin is looking weak to his own people, so you can imagine how the U.S. now sees Putin as a pussy and that we can do whatever we want. It's dangerous.
It's true.
Our people to be emboldened like that. Very dangerous.
Yeah.
These are viewed as empty threats by the West now. They know Russia could win and end the war by going on the offensive because the conditions are almost perfect right now, and Putin will not take advantage of it. Therefore, they do not take any nuclear threats coming from Russia as credible. That's very dangerous. We sincerely believe we can do whatever we want, and Russia will do nothing in response. That is why we keep crossing these red lines and stuff, okay?
How many red lines? Probably a dozen, at least, significant ones.
Yeah.
How many Russian boys have been killed in this unnecessarily? I worry about the Ukrainian losses, too. They're human beings. I get that. But Russia, Putin, you're right. Putin is looking worse and worse and worse by the day. This thing is going nowhere, and the poor people in Donbass are, as you said correctly, exhausted. I got this from Russell Bentley over there. He knows. They just can't believe that they, after 70, 80 days of combat, that the Ukes are literally in the western outskirts of the city of Donetsk. They're still there. They haven't been broomed out. Still there. So what does that tell you? What does that tell you? They should be thermobaric bombed into oblivion. It just is nuts.
Well, listen, now that Ukraine's got good defenses there, and they have all their soldiers there, that is not the place to go on the offensive. You don't go on an offensive against strong points.
You go around
you
above
attack
or below.
Weak points.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And try to encircle them, cut off their supplies, and then starve them out, whatever. So, now let me give you two different sources. There's a guy in Alabama named Jeff McMullen. Okay, he's got excellent contacts with Ukraine. Okay, he knows on a daily basis almost what's going on. Plus he was an American officer, a combat engineer, so he does understand military strategy and stuff like that. He's well versed in it. He's got very sober assessments of things. So he talked to me, and he was like he just gave me this analysis of the Prigozhin mutiny and stuff, and it was just very sober and very to the point. And what he's doing is he's kind of looking at what's going on and the implications. Okay, so another source, his name is David Coote, and he's in Colorado. He's an airline pilot, but he used to be an Army pilot, a helicopter pilot. Okay, so he also understands military strategy and stuff. He's well versed in it. Now, he's the one that he said his contacts are telling him that Putin's actually a Zionist, and he's in on it. He wants to slaughter the Russian people.
Oh,
okay.
No. Oh, this concurs with the story about him making a deal with world Zionism not to kill Zelensky.
Yeah. So anyways, but he got back to me just before the show got going, and he told me, he said that he's got good inside information that they're going to be jumping off on the offensive any day down. They're just trying to get everything organized and ready to go. So I think they are going to have an offensive, because Putin's got to know he's dead if he doesn't. You know, he's got to go.
Oh, he's toast. Oh, you're right. No,
he has to do it.
There can be no other outcome. No.
Right.
I can tell you from...
Go ahead.
From what I was told is the people there are not happy in ways that reflect exactly what you're saying. And that's just more confirmation. I'm just giving you that. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They're not happy.
So, anyways, the mutiny was kind of a good thing because it brought out things. You know, my sources before were basically the general staff. So, it's like I was getting their version of things, which was accurate in many ways, but at the same time, there's things they neglected to mention. Okay. Now, these people that talked to David, I believe they are outside of Russia proper. So I think they felt free to criticize him, okay, because they're not in Russia, but they're very well connected. So
this is really reaching a point of critical mass, and I think you've summed it up very well.
This is the month of decision. July is it. Either he jumps off in July or Russia loses the war, and the Antichrist wins the world. Okay, so let me just give a quick This is a big picture, secular perspective, and this is put out on June 19th by Colonel Douglas McGregor, and he gave his take. So I'm just going to read verbatim what he said. He said, "You have to look at the people who are in charge across the West, whether it is Washington or Berlin, Paris, and London. All of these people are part of a class of political figures who have embraced this notion of globalism, and I will add to that that the dangerous notion that they are somehow or another morally superior to anyone else, and therefore have the right to demand that the rest of the world do as they say, to put it bluntly. The narrative that if we do not fight the evil Russians who are hell-bent on conquering Europe, which of course is nonsense, then we will eventually have to fight them in Poland or Germany, and perhaps even here. This is the sort of thing that people that know nothing at all about war, people that know nothing at all about what is happening will eagerly ingest and believe. Unless there is a counter-narrative, and what is happening at this time in contrast to the Vietnam period is that there is no counter-narrative this time. I mean, the media is universally controlled by the same people who control your government, control the financial markets, and entertainment. They are all part of the same class and are committed to sort of a Trotskyite vision of perpetual revolution to advance their aims. The truth of the matter is that none of us share their aims. We're not interested in homogenizing the world and turning it into some sort of Sovietized entity. I mean, a lot of people talk about these leaders as fascists. I think that is very misleading. I think, in fact, you are talking about this Trotskyite mentality that says we are going to erase borders, we are going to destroy national identity, and we're going to eliminate individual countries. We are going to forcibly homogenize the world, create new people, and create new people. The notion that that you know people are fungible, and this is all bound up with a very strong atheist creed, that there is nothing beyond this world, and therefore what we do is ultimately irrelevant if we do it in the name of what we say is good and moral. And that is defined by these globalist views." Okay, Colonel McGregor, in a nutshell, described it beautifully. Okay. Now, he's using the term Trotskyite. You got to remember, he's a cold warrior, like I was, and he's probably very well-read in Marxist and communist literature. Trotskyite, see, Stalin decided, well, we have to build communism in the Soviet Union first, and Trotsky said, no, we have to attack all over the world. We have to have constant revolution going on. We have to constantly attack the Western infrastructure, political infrastructure and stuff. And so he had to run away from Russia, and then Stalin sent a hitman to Mexico City, where he was living in an asylum, and murdered him in 1940. So, you know, I guess Stalin was sort of a conservative communist as opposed to a liberal communist, okay? So that's what it is.
Here's another little clip of Doug McGregor. This is short. Mm-hmm. He said some very interesting things. It's only about 2 minutes, so take a listen to this.
I don't think we'll ever get to the 2024 election. I think things are going to implode in Washington before then. I think our economic financial condition is fragile. It's going to come home to roost in ugly ways. I will tell you, I don't know exactly how it will happen. I think we're going to end up in a situation where we find out the banks are closed for 2 or 3 weeks and nobody can get into them.
You think so?
I think we're going to run into something like that, yeah. I also think that the levels of violence and criminality in our cities is so high that it's going to spill over into other places in society. People that normally think they can live remote from the problem are now beginning to be touched by the problem. Then I look at this thing in Ukraine. I think Ukraine is going to lose catastrophically. It's going to be a complete collapse. And that, too, is going to have an effect here at home because people are going to say, well, wait a minute. Everybody told us Ukraine was winning. Everybody told us X, Y, and Z. I mean, sort of the Russian hoax on steroids. All of those things are going to come together or converge in some way that's going to prevent us from reaching, you know, the status quo. Oh, another election. Oh, another set of campaigns and so forth.
There you go.
That's his view. I think, he's got a sharp analysis there. I think that's very possible. So let me give you the big picture, but from a Christian perspective, okay?
Right.
So the Christian perspective would be, you know, where are we at? They have the seven seals of the apocalypse. Where are we at? So the first horse was a white horse, was given a bow and sent out to conquer and conquer. That would be white people conquering the world from 1415 until now, okay? There's not a nation on earth that wasn't under white rule at some point in this time. The second seal is the red horse. It's given a great sword to take peace away from the earth. That would be communism, starting 1832 when Moses Hess published The Holy History of Mankind, the beginning of communism and Zionism, modern communism and modern Zionism, okay, as a formal philosophy. All right, and then communists, the great shield, great sword, and take peace away from the earth. They fought each other, like China and Russia fought each other. Communists couldn't get along. Okay, so but you see, communism is a child of humanism and progressivism, the Enlightenment in Europe, and it is what is the father of wokeism that we're suffering through now. So that brought about the black horse with holding a balances in his hand. That's black equality, black equity, okay? It's DEI, okay? This is the persecution of white people, okay? Then the fourth horse... The fourth horse, well, in most Bibles it says a pale horse. But if you go to the Greek and look what the Greek word there for pale is, the word is chloros. And chloros means yellow-green. So this would be 1980 when Iraq, a Sunni nation with a green flag, attacked Iran, a Shia nation, and Shia's color is yellow. Sunni color is green, okay? The fifth seal is the persecution of Christians, okay? What is ushering in the persecution of Christians? We should have saw this coming, but the LGBT, the critical gender theory, that is what is the basis for the persecution of Christians. First, it was just Christians baking cakes and Christians that didn't want to participate in gay weddings and stuff like that for moral reasons, okay? But see, it's against the law because right now in America, LGBT people are a protected class. If you do anything against them, you are wrong. You are always wrong with that. Now, when did this begin? This began on January 20th, 2020, the day that the Biden administration took office, they instituted the Green New Deal, they instituted CRT, CGT, and DEI, okay? And you can see the persecution of Christians just stepping up and stepping up and stepping up. It's going to get much worse. It's going to get horrible, as a matter of fact. It'll be the gay people who bring this upon you because, you see, only Christians and Muslims think that LGBT is a disgusting and shameful sin. So Muslims and Christians have to be exterminated so that the 3 to 5% of people who are LGBT so they can feel comfortable. Okay, it's all for them. We have to kill everybody else to appease these perverts. Okay, so that's the fifth seal, folks. That's where we're at. We're at the fifth seal. The sixth seal is a big war. Okay, it's nuclear war. It's big trouble. Okay, so this is where we're at. From the Christian perspective, we are in the end times. This is Satan's time on earth. The world situation is shaping up for a world totalitarian dictatorship and the time of great troubles. Colonel McGregor was saying big trouble's coming, okay? The Antichrist system is not just in place, it is already in charge. The Antichrist has been in charge since January 2020. What will the Antichrist be like? Well, there is Justin Trudeau, Emmanuel Macron, Gavin Newsom, model antichrists, who are pretty boys and woke masters of virtue signaling, whom hell always follows. I mean, look at California. I mean, that's hell. Then there is Joe Biden and the Joe Biden model antichrist that is a mere placeholder and a puppet as a front for an ideology, a Trotsky ideology. How to define Trotskyism? We are living in it now since 2020. Actually, Lula da Silva in Brazil is the same. So is Cyril Ramaphosa in South Africa, Mahendra Modi in India, and Chairman Xi in China. No matter who wins, humanity loses. Don't be surprised if you see Russia fail because they are a Christian nation. I hope not. Okay, Russia can buy us all time. The woke hate Christian, Muslims, and white people. Remember, this is the Antichrist time, and he must complete his mission. So I will not be surprised if Russia did mess up. I mean, don't put too much hope in it. I mean, put a little bit of hope in it because, well, Russia, I mean, Putin has been chastised by his people. I mean, he's got to do it. He's got to do it or he's going to lose. He knows he's going to lose. Okay. So everyone is sure that Joe Biden will not be president in 2024. But if Revelation is true, then he will be reelected in 2024. I find it absurd that the rigged elections, that after the rigged elections of 2018, 2020, and 2022, people actually believe that somehow there will be a free and fair election in 2024. That is magical thinking. That is ridiculous and absurd. It's like me running a con on you, and then you decide, oh man, I was conned, and then I run another con on you, and successful again, the same con, four times in a row. Okay, if only people had that much faith in themselves or in Christ, we would not be in this mess. America is worshiping a God that failed. There is no Constitution or Bill of Rights. It is on paper only. It has no real meaning. I mean, look at our country. Do you think we have equal justice before the law or equal anything before the law? No, there's one law for white people, and there's a different law for everybody else, okay? Different standards for different people. So it is possible that someone will try to stop Biden with an assassination, but it's not his mind that matters. It is the woke ideology behind him. Yes, he could be the Antichrist. He is the most disgusting, corrupt, immoral person to ever be president of the United States. Biden is the ultimate lawless man. Biden also claims to be a Christian and a Roman Catholic, but he is by just being how he is just being who he is a blasphemy to God. The Antichrist is a lawless man that comes out of the church. People can see how disgusting he is, yet they praise him and respect him, especially in the media. Okay, now I'm not saying that Biden is the Antichrist, but, you know, if the Antichrist is such a disagreeable person, how could he possibly come to power? Ask yourself that question, and then ask yourself, how the hell did Biden become president? He's a disgusting, incestuous pedophile. He admitted before Prime Minister Modi of India, he sat there and said, well, I was busy selling state secrets. He wasn't joking. He wasn't making a smart-ass remark. He was a demented old man saying exactly what he thought. Okay? There's nothing. I mean, Biden could get up and rape a child in front of TV, and the media wouldn't even, they would shut it down and wouldn't even report on it. They would deny it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's no evil, nothing disgusting that people won't accept as the leader of the free world and the guy who wants to be the leader of the whole world. You know, you have to realize that this man is tormenting other countries. He's not just tormenting us. I'm very happy to see a lot of countries in Africa, in Latin America, in Asia, just saying no to America.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nothing to do with it.
Now, if Americans could just say no to this monster who rules us.
Americans don't seem to be able to do much of anything anymore, Mitch. They just can't. They don't have access to the mainstream media. They have no voice. Certainly, emails aren't going to turn the situation around. They can send all the emails they want. It's not going to happen. I don't see it. They're too debilitated. No. Too many of them are sick from the shots. They've lost their jobs. They've got money problems. They're under terrible stress. All the ingredients would seem to be there. I mean, where is the outrage about what's been done to people? They just don't understand how badly they've been set. They're dying. They're just dying. A couple hundred million Americans have been injected with this crap. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Well, I know some people that are injected, too, and I know them before and I know them now. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, they're super stressed out. They have their personality changed. They're not the same people they were a couple years ago.
Tell me more. What are they different? They lose their sense of humor. Have they lost their intellectual, astute observation capabilities? What's changed?
They've lost their sense of humor. They've lost their intellectual ability. They are anxious about everything in their life.
Wow.
They're stressed out. They can't handle all the stress that they have. Okay, they lash out at other people and accuse other people and stuff.
A lot of hostility.
I mean, it's just not the way they were before. It's almost like the shot was a hostility shot.
The reason I ask you is I've heard this many times. People now, they're not kind anymore. They're not thoughtful anymore.
Not even kind to relatives, not even kind to family.
No.
They're becoming enemies with their own family and stuff. It's really disgusting. You know, I was this is just off the wall, but I was watching this movie. You know, I usually try to watch a movie before I go to bed, just so I can fall asleep. The movie actually puts me to sleep. But I was watching this movie called 28 Days Later and stuff, and what it's talking about, this rage virus. So when people get the rage virus, they just attack other people and stuff. And when I was thinking about the way that these people change, and they've become like, they blame everybody else. They blame everything else. They lash out at everybody. You know, I was like, oh, it was 28 days later trying to, like, preview what might be coming, you know?
They always tell us. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The psychological aspect of the injection campaign is overlooked by most people. But I think it's a very big player in this whole horror show.
Well, you know. Listen, Jeff, it's like, have I always been an anti-vaxxer and stuff? Well, no, but I have been about, let's have a little common sense. For example, for some reason, in the past 3 years, I was attacked twice by rabid bats. I killed the bats. I took them into the hospital, sent them to the state lab, and both of them had rabies. Okay, so I had a choice to make. Do I take this rabies vaccination or do I not take it? Okay, well, what's the cost-benefit ratio? Well, if you get rabies, you're dead. It's 100% fatal. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, I'll take this vaccination because I don't want to die, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But then COVID comes along and the death rate is less than 1%.
Mm-hmm.
Why would we take a vaccine for something that is not going to harm us? You know, it's common sense. The common sense is gone. Even, you know what I've noticed in maybe in the past 10 years, and it's accelerating now, science is becoming totally bogus. And remember the mantra during the vaccination, mandatory vaccination thing was, believe in science. I mean, all the woke people were going around saying, I believe the science. Well, you know, what is science? Science is something people do. Is science really good? Is it really solid? Well, no, it's not. It's inflation. It's like colleges need to enroll students in different science programs and stuff. All these students have to publish. So what they do is they lower the standards so everybody can get published. And what we have is a lot of bullshit science out there. Okay,
oh, yeah.
I would not trust science any more than I would trust the government of the United States.
No. No, I agree. You're right.
Because they pay for it's the government that pays for this bad science.
Oh, look, science is all grant. Science will do what the grants want it to do.
Right. That's just what you tell people what they want to hear. When they're paying for your paper, you tell them the results they want.
It's
so science
correct.
Is just as corruptible as anything else is.
I think you're right, and I also think you're doubly right about what your sources say about Russia and Putin. He is, it's now Fisher cut bait. You can't play this game any longer. Watch these maps every day of the entire line of contact, and after all these days of battle, 100 square kilometers, that's next to nothing over that whole line of contact. That's all that's changed hands. The Russians have it, but the Ukrainians have done nothing except kill Russians and be killed at a rate 6, 8, 10 to 1, maybe. We don't know.
But the Russians are not going to win on the defensive. They need to pick up the initiative now or lose. This is the month of decision.
I agree.
This is it.
All right. Mitchell, thank you very much. Extraordinary hour. And we'll talk to you next week. Okay. Mitchell Henderson. You don't get any better analysis than that. All right. You just look at the video at the top of the homepage. Go up and down the line of contact with the gentleman who runs that military summary site, and you'll get the idea. It's trench war. It's World War I. All right. Back with you tomorrow. Take care.